America is ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more, everything you need all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/getup. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/getup. That's netsuite.com/getup.
Good morning. It's time to get up with Major League Baseball. The clock is ticking after Rob Manfred quickly rejects the latest proposal. Can the season be saved, or is it over before it starts? Plus, can you imagine a fall without football? The NFL responds to an ominous warning from the nation's top infectious disease doctor. And cowboy up or cowboy down? Why one of our analysts has big concerns about Big D in 2020. Good morning to you. I'm Ryan Smith in for Mike Greenberg. We will be with you for the next 2 hours. We've got a jam-packed show coming up with a lot going on this morning. So let's get right into it and begin with baseball. And it is a precarious situation indeed. We're at a crucial point on whether baseball will be played or not. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred has rejected the union's most recent counteroffer to play baseball games at all. MLBPA delivered a counterproposal Thursday that included a 70-game season, along with a universal DH and expanded playoffs for the 2020 and 2021 season. Now, here's a quote from Rob Manfred in a call from reporters yesterday. It is telling. He says, this needs to be over. I told him 70 games was simply impossible given the calendar and the public health situation. And he, I'm assuming Tony Clark there, went ahead and made that proposal anyway. It is getting dicey. Let's bring in Buster Olney and Doug Glanville to talk more about this. By the way, according to the union proposal, the players would have to report a week from today. This is feeling like a high-stakes game of chicken. Buster, where do things stand right now?
Yeah, Ryan, look, you would think that they're close enough now that they would work out their differences. The owner's proposing 60 games early in the week. The players countering with 70 games yesterday. And as I said, people have told me from both sides that they're close enough now where both sides have to assess, look, are we really ready to blow up the season over these differences? Or are we going to find a sweet spot, maybe 64 games in the middle, 65, 66 or something like that? But as one person said to me, this relationship is so toxic and so unproductive that it is unpredictable. I do think they'll eventually get a deal. Maybe they'll get it today, maybe over the weekend, and only then can we really begin to assess the damage to the product because of how these negotiations have played out over the last 6 weeks.
Okay, so a hint of optimism for you, Buster. Doug, what's your reaction?
Well, you know, they can't even seem to agree on what they've agreed upon. You know, I mean, that's a, when you look at that, you know, you see the dialogue in the sort of open market of people discussing it publicly. And it's so inconsistent because they have to go back to their constituents and get feedback and then go back. But in between, they're having this sort of public discussion and it's very counterproductive. And what they have to be mindful of, you know, lessons from when I was part of the executive subcommittee over PEDs. Then Senator John McCain jumped in from his Commerce Committee and started to get involved. Now, we have a lot of other things that Congress is working on given the pandemic, but you don't want the sort of it to get to the stage where now public officials start chiming in saying, what's the problem? Maybe it's your antitrust exemption. I mean, you're starting to open up the door for everybody to get in because they see 70 and 60 and they say, wow, add those two and divide by two. And there you go. There's your number. So they have to be very careful about who might now start stepping in.
That's the last thing you want, outside influences coming in. So, Buster, you mentioned a little hint of optimism there. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Percentage-wise, what are the chances that a season happens? Let's say from 0 to 100%.
I think it's 100% that they'll at least try to get a season going because it's so important to the sport. It's so important to each side. And if either side blows it up at this point, they're going to look like complete villains. If, in fact, they do get an agreement on the money, though, that's the Mount Everest of these talks. Right behind it is K2, which is to keep the players safe, to keep them healthy under the safety and health protocol that they have to go through. And you mentioned the timeline. Like, the realities of the clock and the calendar are absolutely kicked in at this point. They have to get moving to get all these processes in place to do everything they can to keep the players and staffers safe.
And, you know, Doug, Buster talks about the idea of the impact on the game. As this goes further, what kind of impact do you think it has on the reputation and the way people see the game?
Well, it's definitely negative, Ryan. I mean, you recognize what people are facing in the larger society, the health crisis, unemployment. I mean, you're not going to get a whole lot of sympathy along those lines because of the stress everybody's under. So the timeline not only opens up the door for more information and concerns as we're opening up as a country, the virus is still present. So that's going to make it more stressful on everyone as they sort of don't move forward and don't put protocols in place to actually address these issues.
And it makes it more stressful on us, too, because we talk about baseball all the time. We want to start seeing baseball, you guys. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. All right, let's turn now to football and their efforts to get back on the field safely. Now, Adam Schefter is reporting that a Buccaneers assistant coach has tested positive for COVID-19 and two other assistants have been quarantined. Now, just when we're starting to get fired up for this season, this comes. Earlier on Thursday, Dr. Anthony Fauci expressed concerns about the NFL's ability to safely hold the 2020 season. He told CNN, quote, "Unless players are essentially in a bubble, insulated from the community, and they are tested nearly every day, it would be very hard to see how football is able to be played this fall." On a Zoom call to announce that Hard Knocks would feature the Rams and the Chargers, Sean McVay actually joked with Anthony Lynn about these COVID guidelines.
I mean, is this crazy, Coach Lynn? We're talking about some of this stuff, and we're playing football. I mean, we're going to social distance, but we play football? Hey, it's just, this is really hard for me to understand all this. I don't want to be, I don't get it. I really don't.
I know it's tough. We're going to have to test them every day.
You know, guys, I bring up a really good point. The nature of the activity is one that could actually lead to some sort of coronavirus exposure. So let's bring in Ryan Clark, Mike Tannenbaum, and Jeff Darlington. Jeff, what are you hearing about the possibility of a bubble format in the NFL?
Well, I can tell you this. Two voices of skepticism there about the season and the way it will move forward. I've spoken to executives with teams and within the league, and I get no sense that they're looking or planning for the possibility of this quote-unquote bubble format. You know, we can point out that the NBA and perhaps Major League Baseball to some capacity could pull that off. But we're talking about NFL rosters of 32 rosters with 53 active players. And that doesn't include the practice squad. What I can tell you is the contingency plans in place do include potentially expanding practice squad rosters to as many as six more players, perhaps this year, and which would mean that if you do have a player that tests COVID, you can isolate him and bring up another player. The Bucs have been discussing a very interesting scenario of actually taking a quarterback and putting him in quarantine, not even having him train with the team, so that if your quarterbacks wind up getting COVID or have to be quarantined because of contact with COVID, that you'll have somebody to use. So we're talking about a situation where contingency plans are being discussed, none of which, however, describe potentially what Dr. Fauci is describing in having bubble situation.
Yeah, some very interesting contingency plans nonetheless. Mike, what are your thoughts on a bubble model in the NFL?
Well, we're going to need some aspects of that because the facilities just aren't big enough. When we go to training camp, ordinarily we have 90 players on the roster and we can social distance 6 inches. We have to double up. Oftentimes it's the rookies. So I'm hearing a lot of chatter when we talk to teams about going from 90 to maybe 80 players for training camp, maybe going from 4 to 2 games in terms of preseason. And then, Ryan, one of the interesting things that I've heard is teams are thinking about alternating maybe offense and defense, where maybe half the squad's in the building, the other half may still have virtual meetings just because these facilities can't accommodate the expanded rosters. And I even heard one team make an interesting point about they're going to actually practice losing a single caller. So if it's an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator who, unfortunately, during the season, let's say, gets COVID, What's the backup plan? So there's a lot of contingencies that teams are going to have to work through during training camp.
You know, Ryan Clark, I'm interested in this part of it as well. As a player, let's say you're getting ready for the season, you hear Dr. Fauci's comments, you hear Jeff and Mike talk about the limitations, and the idea right now is maybe not a bubble format in the NFL. What's going through your mind as a player?
Well, if you're a player, you're trying to understand how the season is going to take place. And obviously, what happens if it doesn't? This is your livelihood. This is the way you provide for your family. But for many of these guys, this is their passion and their dream. But when you hear what Dr. Fauci says, even listening to Sean McVay, and he's laughing and he made a joke about it. But think about that. We're going to social distance, but we are going to play football. Listen, my son's in college now, and I've spoken to their coaches, and one of their coaches told me, I'm telling the guys, you have to give up a year of life away from football if you want this season to take place. And I think that's what it's going to be for many of these NFL players. What's hard is the roster numbers, also the amount of time it takes for an NBA season. Obviously, the Major League Baseball season is going to be cut down. The NBA is just coming back for a small section of the season they have to play. When we're looking at football here, we're talking about 16 to 17 regular season weeks and then playoffs and Super Bowls. That's an extremely long time to try to put professional athletes and adults in the bubble. It's going to be extremely interesting to see how they move forward. And listening to Jeff talk about contingency plans, that contingency plan sounds like to me they're saying somebody's going to get it. So we just need more people around when they do.
You know, it sounds like a tough situation. We had a similar thing in the NBA where guys were reluctant to be away from their families during this time to be in that kind of bubble. I wonder how NFL players would feel about a situation like that. So, Mike, let me ask you a couple seconds left. Are you concerned that the game itself inherently presents a significant risk to possibly coronavirus exposure?
Yeah, and Ryan, I think at the end of the day, we have to understand some players are going to get it. We have to take all reasonable precautions we can. The whole idea of keeping a quarterback in quarantine, we're going to have to do a couple of things mechanically as a sport to make this work and take reasonable precautions. And unfortunately, some people will probably get it. That's just the inevitability of what we're dealing with. But at the end of the day, if Commissioner Goodell says that the pros outweigh the cons and the NFLPA is on board, hopefully we'll have a season and there'll be a lot of good that comes from it. But I will say this. I know the NFL feels they're really lucky because they're going to learn a lot from MLB, NHL, and obviously the NBA.
Yeah, they have some very good examples to follow. We'll see how that plays out. Guys, thank you so much. We'll come back to you later in the show. Well, coming up on Get Up, they have a new coach. Their quarterback isn't signed, and that's not all. Is it going to be a recipe for disaster in Dallas? Plus, publicly, you won't hear Bill Belichick talking about Tom Brady, but privately, that's a different story according to his former players. What does he mean? We'll tell you when Get Up continues.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your goldfish to sing Bizet's Carmen? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Dove Men's Plus Care. Today and every day, care makes the difference. Well, back with you on Get Up and what promises to be one of the biggest storylines of this year. Brady, Belichick, the two are synonymous, as they should be. The pair made 9 Super Bowls together. They won 6 of them, both records for a coach-quarterback combo, including the playoffs. Brady and Belichick accounted for 249 wins over their 20 seasons together. And that is over 100 wins more than any other quarterback coach duo in the Super Bowl era. And to boot, including the playoffs, the two had a winning percentage of just a shade under 77%. However, Without Brady, Belichick has won just 46% of his games as a head coach. Very interesting, right? Now, take a look at this. What is future Hall of Fame coach going to do without his Hall of Fame quarterback? Let's check out what former Patriot Rodney Harrison told the Boston Herald. Might bring up a couple of articles. Everyone's saying it's over. Brady this, Belichick, Brady that. But, of course, he'll say something about that. But at the end of the day, whether he makes the point or not, he knows the team will be motivated to prove they can win without Tom. Jeff Darlington, let's bring you back in, as well as Mike Tannenbaum and Ryan Clark, our Football Friday trifecta. Guys, start with you, Jeff. What are you hearing about the Patriots and Belichick's motivation to win without Brady?
Well, I mean, I love this. This is not just the story of the year. This is honestly one of the best NFL storylines of the past two decades. You now have Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, two guys who talked about forever, but now playing for essentially and coaching different teams. Bill Belichick, of course, is motivated. The one thing I'd point out here is that Tom Brady, when assessing the landscape of the Patriots and struggling with the offensive weapons they had last year, they're really not good enough to make a championship run, at least in his opinion. That certainly will motivate Belichick even more, but that's going to be a difficult task trying to accomplish that feat without the greatest of all time in Tom Brady. So, Belichick, one he certainly will be up to, and I can't wait. In the words of Terrell Owens, get your popcorn ready.
Nobody can wait. I'll tell you what, Mike, you've known Belichick for a long time. How does he motivate a team to win without Brady?
Yeah, I've been fortunate to work with him a couple of times. And I'll tell you this, Ryan, it's going to be the process. It's going to be one day at a time. And he's intrinsically motivated just to be great. And the standards are the standards. But when we look at his non-Tom Brady production as a coach, it's remarkable. Cleveland Browns had a good team before they moved to Baltimore. The 1996 Patriots, where he was the defensive coordinator, went to the Super Bowl. And then when he got to the Jets with Vinny Testaverde in 1998 as the defensive coordinator, went to the AFC championship game. And then maybe the one that stings me the most personally is 2008. Tom Brady misses the year with Matt Castle. They still have an excellent season. We have Brett Favre with the Jets, and we still can't catch him. But I think one other thing really bears repeating here, which is he correctly evaluated Tom Brady and kept four quarterbacks in 2000. Last year, he kept Jarrett Stidham and cut Brian Hoyer on Labor Day last year. So he saw something in Jarrett Stidham, and we could talk about all the quarterbacks from Jordan Love, Cam Newton, all these other quarterbacks he's passed on. There must be something in Stidham that he really believes in, and I think they're going to win the division again because I just wouldn't bet against Coach Belichick.
There you go. Bold prediction from Mike. We'll hold you to it, man. All right, so Ryan Clark, I love this. You have a specific story from your playing days about Belichick motivating his players. Tell us.
Yeah, listen, everybody talks, you know, looks at Bill Belichick in the media and he doesn't really say much, but he's about bulletin board material. The year I got sick, Anthony Smith was our starting free safety and he was backed in the corner to say that he could guarantee a win against Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. And they're throwing double passes. It's bombs and bombs and bombs. And then, and eventually they throw a touchdown pass and Tom Brady runs down the field to get in Anthony Smith's face. And I knew that was what Belichick motivated that team with the entire week. And listen, that team was undefeated anyway. They didn't need those types of motivations, but Bill Belichick is always looking for an edge. Bill Belichick wakes up and eats greatness and wins for breakfast. And so he's going to find a way to get this team ready to play and let them know that no one believes in them without Tom Brady. And that's something that they're going to hear. That's something that he's going to pound into their head. And while they're preparing, he's going to make sure they are focused on their individual task because you no longer have the GOAT to pick up everybody else.
Oh, that's going to be incredible. Mike, I got to ask you, as we look at this, though, I wonder how it looks from the other side. Brady, you know, he's going to be under pressure to win. But at the same time, if he doesn't start well, people are going to say, well, he's the same guy without Belichick. How does that play out for Brady and how he looks at the season?
Well, I think fortunately for Tom, he has a really good team. He just needs to be the point guard. I mean, those weapons are incredible. They have three tight ends with Gronkowski, Cam Brate, O.J. Howard. They have two basketball players on the outside led by Mike Evans. They solidify the offensive line. So, and Tom's really smart. He's not going to turn the ball over. And if he just distributes the ball to those playmakers, they're going to have a good season in Tampa Bay.
All right, Ryan and Jeff, I want you to both weigh in on this. Who has the better season, Patriots, Bucks? Ryan first.
Well, for me, it's going to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm not so sold on Jarrett Stidham the way Mike T is, just because Bill Belichick has tabbed him. There's only one Tom Brady, so I'm going with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay, Jeff Darlington?
I've seen what Tom Brady can do. I haven't seen anything of what Jarrett Stidham can do. The Bucs are going to have a better season than the Patriots. Quite frankly, I don't think it's even close.
All right. We're going to hold you guys to this at the end of the season and keep an eye on it. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Well, coming up, at least one NFL owner says he's been open to signing Colin Kaepernick since 2017. Who is it and what would it take to bring Cap back? We'll have that coming up on Get Up.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
The 28th annual ESPYs are happening Sunday night, virtually hosted by WNBA star Sue Bird, U.S. Women's National Team co-captain Megan Rapinoe, and Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson. Now, this year's awards focused on service, perseverance, and courage in the world of athletics. That's Sunday at 9 Eastern on ESPN, ESPN2, and the ESPN app with the ESPYs countdown show at 7:30 Eastern. Welcome back to Get Up. It's 10 a.m. Eastern and you're watching our show. Now, Mike Greenberg is off this morning. I'm Ryan Smith. And I'll let you know, this morning's KBO game ran a little bit long, so we're on with you until 11:30 a.m. And then after that, it's going to be First Take. But let's get up and go through some of the news around the sports world. Starting with baseball, Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred rejecting the Players Association's proposal for a 70-game regular season schedule. Manfred told reporters, quote, "This needs to be over," and Jeff Passan is going to join us with the latest coming up. Also, unhappy with his contract, Jamal Adams on Thursday told the Jets that he wants to be traded. However, sources say the Jets continue to have no intention of moving the Pro Bowl safety, who signed to the 2021 season. And 49ers wide receiver Deebo Samuel underwent surgery yesterday after fracturing his left foot while working out earlier this week. A source told Adam Schefter that Samuel is expected to be okay for week one. Well, let's talk some Colin Kaepernick. He has remained a free agent since opting out of his contract with the 49ers after the 2016 season. But this is interesting. Raiders owner Mark Davis recently said he'd have no problem if his team wanted to sign Colin Kaepernick. And here is what he said. He told our reporter Paul Gutierrez, "Since 2017, I have told coaches and general managers that if they want to hire Colin Kaepernick, they have my blessing." Let's bring in our trifecta again. Jeff Darlington, what is the latest on the Kaepernick news front?
Well, I can tell you, Ryan, with all due respect to the comments that we're hearing from Mark Davis, for instance, from Anthony Lynn, the Chargers coach, who essentially said that Kaepernick fits what they're trying to do, that he believes that he belongs in the NFL, and ultimately said that he would be on their workout list. Neither the Raiders nor the Chargers are imminently signing Colin Kaepernick. So I think when we look at that, that's a microcosm of sort of what the rest of the NFL is doing at this point. We can hear people say at this point they'd be willing and approve the signing of Colin Kaepernick, but no team is doing it. And I've talked to a number of executives that are just like, yeah, not right now, not the fit for us. So whatever the reason is, Colin Kaepernick remains off an NFL roster. And when we hear what Anthony Lynn is saying, that he fits that roster, what they're trying to do, that he would be willing to sign him and all those things, yet doesn't sign him, I would say that that causes me to be a little bit pessimistic about Colin Kaepernick landing on a roster anytime soon. We'll see if that changes and whether there becomes a team that has a need at the position and believes Kaepernick will fill it. But at this time, based on my conversations, I see nothing imminent.
And that's going to become key, because I think a lot of people are going to say, look, it's the popular thing to say, yeah, Colin Kaepernick is a guy we'd sign. But people aren't going to believe that until he's actually signed somewhere. So, Mike, what does this look like from a front office perspective?
Sure. You would bring Colin Kaepernick in and his agent, and you would sit down and have a meaningful conversation to construct a partnership and say, look, we got to go win football games. That's what this is all about. However, on your off day, what else do you want to accomplish? How can we work meaningfully with the initiatives that are so important to you? You have an incredible platform. You've done such a great job with that. So during the season, you have one day off a week. In the off season, obviously, you have a lot more time. NFL teams have incredible resources, and we can work collaboratively so you can be successful on the field and off the field. And then a couple other boxes that need to be checked is conditioning. Where are you? You haven't played football in a number of years. Could he pass a conditioning run? And then economics. He made a lot of money. And the reality is this. Some quarterbacks can go from being a starter or a backup. Some stars retire. So there's going to be an economic discussion. But if all those boxes can be checked, there's no reason why he can't be signed.
Ryan Clark, what are some good fits for Kaepernick?
I mean, I think when you listen to the teams that they mention, I don't think that those teams are good fits. But I do think a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars, who have Garner Minshew as a starter, who don't necessarily know if he can be that guy going forward. A team I think would be interested would be the Minnesota Vikings. Obviously, you know you have Kirk Cousins as the starting quarterback. Sean Mannion is your backup. That Sean Mannion has never been Colin Kaepernick. He won't be Colin Kaepernick, and he's not as talented as Colin Kaepernick is. And even with Mike Tannenbaum saying that you wonder can he pass the conditioning test, listen, I watched Ben Roethlisberger pass conditioning test for 8 years straight. Colin Kaepernick is going to be okay. But if you're the Minnesota Vikings, if you are the epicenter for what has started this new Black Lives Matters movement where the non-racists have finally come over and been to be anti-racist, what would be a better city? What would be a better place to give Colin Kaepernick a place to play on top of the fact that right now, 100%, 4 years out of football, he is unequivocally better than your backup quarterback. And so I think Colin Kaepernick's going to have to understand people aren't bringing him in to be the starter. I think he believes that. He understands that. He knows that. And so it's not going to be a situation to where you have to talk around him in that. So there are two teams, to me at least, that could give Colin Kaepernick a chance that makes sense.
So, Ryan, a follow-up here. There's one thing having a place to play. There's another thing being given a legitimate chance to succeed. We all know quarterbacks have bad days. So if he comes in and things don't go well off the top, or if it's not how teams want to see it, what will be the impact of maybe a team saying, hey, we don't want to have Kaepernick on our team anymore, or we'll give him a chance to try to work out some of the issues?
Well, obviously, any team that brings in Colin Kaepernick is going to be under a microscope as to how they handle him. We live in a world of statements now. So a statement from Anthony Lynn, who I truly respect, or a statement from Mr. Davis over in Las Vegas, those are just statements. Nobody's becoming part of the action. There are words and actions, and we aren't seeing action. Colin Kaepernick, if released once he's into a camp, is going to be a firestorm for that team. And I think teams understand the type of PR hit that would be to their organization and to their program. And so I believe all of these things are taken into account in the evaluation of bringing Colin Kaepernick into your team.
All right. Mike, Jeff, and Ryan, thank you. And guys, I want you to come back to us a little later in the show. Ryan, I want you to stand by. Folks, I want to keep it in football, but turn now to an important story to tell, one that's very personal to our friend Ryan Clark. Ryan's son Jordan and two of his Arizona State football teammates say they were called a racial slur at a Whataburger near campus. Now, due to the pandemic, this is what happened. The drive-through was the only way to order. Jordan Clark says they asked a woman driving her car if they could give her money to buy food for them. She said no because she was in a hurry. Another customer agreed to buy it for them. But while they waited for their food, Clark says, quote, the woman that we asked initially eventually got to the window and proceeded to roll down the window to ask what our problem was. We were sitting on the wall. She then filed a complaint with the manager that we harassed her and he comped her meal. She then turned to us and said in a vindicated voice, she said, thanks for the free food, N-word. Now, Clark goes on to say the store manager gave her the food. She began to drive off while saying bye, N-word. The manager was unfazed. He was quick to condemn us and tell us we were wrong, quick to threaten us and say he'd call the police. Now, Whataburger has released a statement saying, quote, we do not tolerate racism and we're horrified to hear how these customers were treated by another customer. We are reinforcing training with our employees on how this incident was handled and apologize to the players and their families for this terrible experience. Ryan Clark is back with us. Ryan, to see this happen to your son, you know, I don't even want to ask a question. You're a member of our family here. The floor is yours.
Yeah. Well, I think you initially, the first thing is, you know, as a black man and the father of a black young man, I'm happy he's alive, period. That was my first thought. And then that immediately turned to anger. And what's crazy is I wasn't mad at the young lady or the woman. I wasn't mad at the manager. I was mad at myself. I was mad with Jordan. And I'm not necessarily sure that that's the right emotion to have, but nothing pisses me off more than being scared. And even though I knew the moment was over, I was still in that moment as his dad. I was still picturing, as I'm reading it, I'm still picturing what's going on. And I'm playing out other scenarios in my mind. I'm playing out a scenario of if this woman would have had a weapon and she could easily say that these three young black men were threatening her. One of Jordan's friends is a tight end. He's extremely tall. He's a thicker kid. And I believe that if that woman pulls a gun on those young men and if that woman pulls the trigger, I believe that she's never punished. I believe that justice is never served. And even if justice is served, it's not enough to bring my son back. But this isn't just a fear for me every day. This has been a fear for black people forever. My father called me to check on me last night. He obviously called Jordan the day before. And there's a story my dad has been telling around me forever. And we actually laughed at it. And it takes on new meaning for me. When 1977, my father was at a fast food restaurant with his girlfriend at the time, and I know we're trying to get rid of colorism, was a fairer skinned woman, but she was black. But to the white guys in there, she was a white girl. And so they start harassing him and they're using racial slurs and calling him an N-word. And so they attempt to jump my father. And so he jumps behind the counter and he's looking for something to protect himself with, but it's a restaurant. All they had was plastic utensils. And we would laugh about that story and laugh about that story. But he said, I never thought that this many years later, my grandson would be experiencing the same racism that I did. And so where we are in a point to where people are starting to listen, where people are starting to understand who didn't understand before, I believe that the true racists, the people with true hate in their heart, are starting to feel a little bit of the power that they felt over the last few years slip away. So they're going to double down on their racism. They're going to double down on their hate. They're going to double down on their evil. And that's what this woman did. And at the end of Jordan's statement, he kind of lists some of the things that he thought about himself and said, to this woman, I was none of those things. His entire life, he has grown up as my son. And it was my job to put him in better situations than my parents could put me. So he grew up in very affluent areas. He went to schools that were predominantly white because those were the schools that I felt could give him the best opportunity to succeed. But he was always treated as Ryan Clark's son. And he's faced racism and he's heard the word, but it never affected him in this way. And I felt like I didn't prepare him for this situation enough to know as a black man, you can't walk up to cars. You can't wave down cars with white people in it because your life is not of value to all of them. And so I'm blessed that my child is still here. Like if something would have happened to him, it would have broke me. And so for me, I got to do a better job of educating him, and I got to protect him. Because I wouldn't know how to live if he wouldn't have made it out. And so thank you for everybody that reached out to me. And like, I know it's getting better, but it's not better yet and better for everybody. And, you know, like, we just got to keep, you know, staying together, man, and just doing what we can.
Ryan, we are with you, man. We are with you. I thank you for that. I know that was hard. Making me think about my life and my kids, too. They are all we have, our children. Ryan Clark, thank you. Get up. We'll be back after this.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renter's and car insurance with GEICO? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
It's been 100 days since the last NBA game. Earlier this week, the league sent players a 100-plus page handbook detailing health and safety protocols for its bubble plan at Disney World in Orlando. Now, speaking with Outside the Lines yesterday, Mavs owner Mark Cuban was asked about the rising coronavirus cases in Florida ahead of the league's restart.
When you have a controlled environment or as controlled as you possibly can get it, I think we're trying to emulate what we do in our homes, you know, where we feel safer, where, you know, people are getting tested, people are being monitored when they come into the environment. There's continuous information. Every precaution that possibly can be taken, that's exactly what we'll do.
All right, so they're doing all they can. Let's bring in now NBA reporter Brian Windhorst. Wendy, what is the current level of concern regarding the coronavirus and its threat to the restart of the NBA season?
Well, if you just are watching the daily numbers in Orlando, it is very concerning. And while the NBA is going to have a quarantined campus there, hundreds of people are going to be living outside that quarantine and coming in, and they're going to do everything they can to, you know, contain and monitor those people. But it's still a serious concern. And then, Ryan, I think you just have to know that right now NBA players are getting tested. They all have to be tested if they're coming back by next Tuesday. If you look around at what's happening in other sports, if you look at the college athletes, if you look at the NFL teams, if you look at now five MLS teams have reported that players have tested positive, players are going to start testing positive, or staff members, almost certainly by next week. And the protocol that the NBA has put out means that if you have a positive test, whether you're showing symptoms or not, you have to be sidelined to make sure you're okay for 14 days with no exercise. So, you know, the NBA really is okay with these tests coming back positive. They want to identify who is sick. They want to get them treatment. They want to make sure the virus doesn't get into Orlando. But this is a fight that's happening on all sides. And for everything that else is going on, remember, the virus is the number one enemy, and the virus is serious, especially in Orlando.
You know, Brian, I think all the leagues are now coming around to this idea that there might be positive tests if we come back. But I have to ask this question, and I don't want to look at it negatively, but you have to in where we are today. What will it take for the NBA in terms of the number of positive tests to consider putting the resumption of the season on hold?
Ryan, the protocol the NBA put out is 108 pages long. There's thousands of words. It represents thousands of hours of work by doctors, epidemiologists, lawyers, and the like. It is not spelled out in any of that. The answer to that is they don't know. They're just going to see how it goes, and they're going to do their best. And we're all hoping it's going to work.
And I know the players, many of them, they want to come back. They want to get back on the court. But is there concern, especially with what you're describing, what's going on in other sports, what doctors are saying, is there concern among players at this point? What's the level of that concern about coming back?
I think that varies highly. Certainly my feel in talking to folks around the league is there's a tremendous amount of enthusiasm from the players to get back to playing, not only to resume their chance to chase a championship, because a lot of teams feel like this restart opens the field up, but just to get playing basketball with their teammates again, which is something they haven't been able to do. But if you've been following on social media, there's a lot of players out there already playing in open runs with, be it amateur players or other pros all across the country. They want to play. They're excited about this. Everybody's just hoping that when these test results come back and the numbers keep coming in Orlando, it doesn't cause any sort of hiccup.
Okay, and we know that some players can opt out of being in the bubble if they don't want to play, if they're concerned about some of those risks. I wonder, what's the possibility of players not being allowed to play, or even to take it further? Why don't we look at it this way? What happens if a player says, I want to opt out? Does that put them in a worse position than they would have been in, and how?
Well, if a player opts out and he doesn't have a reason that's excused, essentially an injury or a pre-existing condition, he doesn't get paid, which, you know, is complicated, but, you know, the NBA is allowing for that. But there also is, as you mentioned, another thing here. all players' medical records are going to be reviewed by a panel. And it's possible that, and this is more for coaches because they're older and a little bit more susceptible, but it's possible some players could be excused or told that they shouldn't play because of high-risk conditions. Now, nobody knows for sure whether that's going to happen. That process is undergoing right now, but that is also in that protocol. The players have an appeals process if that happens, but it's going to be interesting to see. You know, other leagues have said that people with moderate to severe asthma are deemed high risk. There's a number of NBA players who have asthma, and it's going to depend on what those doctors see in their treatment to see whether that's going to be an issue.
You know, I could see that having a tremendous impact on how far teams go. If you talk about certain coaches not being there, if you talk about certain players not being there. So I wonder, even though you say there's enthusiasm about players coming back, I wonder in practice, in practice of the season, I wonder if players will start to say, hey, we're waiting a week or two for our star to come back because of these protocols. But at the same time, we need him on the court right now.
Yeah, this is all so uncharted, especially because so many NBA players tested positive without serious conditions. They were asymptomatic. And I'm going to tell you that if people start testing positive and they're told, listen, you can't even run on the treadmill for 14 days and you may be out for 3 weeks, that could be an issue. So we'll see how that all plays out in the coming days.
And then all that combined with how their health will be, how their injury status will be coming back. Will they be able to come back? So many questions. Brian, as we near possibly the restart of the season. Thanks, Brian. Let's bring you to this. This Father's Day moment brought to you by Dove Men's Plus Care. Today and every day, care makes the difference. We're going to take a look back at the greatest father-son moments in sports history. Check this out. September 14th, 1990, Ken Griffey Sr. and Ken Griffey Jr. hit back-to-back home runs for the Mariners, becoming the first father-son duo to ever go back-to-back in the same game. I remember watching that one with some of my friends saying, that could be me. Well, tonight, family movie night on ESPN and the ESPN app with this week's film, Rookie of the Year. You remember this one? 12-year-old little leaguer who has this freak accident and it enables him to throw over 100 miles an hour. He signs with the Cubs, and that is when the fun starts, 7 Eastern tonight. Well, coming up, the clock is ticking after Rob Manfred quickly rejects the player's latest proposal. Can the baseball season be saved? Jeff Passan is going to have the latest when Get Up comes back.